semi-live from my favorite studio, Studio B. This is View from the Bleachers. I'm Eric.
I'm Aaron.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm warm.
It's summery. Yeah.
A little bit.
Nope, it has been warm, seasonably warm, but...
Warm and dry.
Sure.
There's a joke in there someplace.
No, we're gonna let anybody who's listening make their own jokes because they're probably way funnier and less appropriate than the ones that we can make on the air. So, you know, yeah. Fill in own joke here. Yeah, it's been a fantastic week.
Yeah.
It's a good sports week.
It has been.
A lot
of stuff.
I mean, they're all good sports weeks if you're a sports fan as I am. But no, this has been a particularly we have a draft.
A draft.
We have a draft, so that always gets me excited for the year or for any kind of professional sports draft.
What draft is it?
It's the NBA.
Oh.
Yeah, no, that's a nice season that just barely ended with the Nuggets winning a championship just a couple weeks ago, and they fire right into drafts and things. And
you'd think they'd like space that out a little bit.
No, they know. There's a window. There's a finite window right now where the only sport going on is baseball. But that doesn't happen. At a certain point, you get NBA, you get NFL mini camps, so all of a sudden the NBA doesn't have it shine.
June, July.
Yes. Yep.
Hockey's over with.
Yeah. Yep. They know. They've got a nice chunk where it's just baseball, which
makes sense.
You know, baseball's the easiest sport to ignore.
And coming right off the finals, I suppose the interest is still there.
Yeah.
And the hype and all the excitement. Yeah.
Even the casual sports fan can name something happening in the NBA.
I'm sure they pay a lot of people a lot of money to determine what's the best, you know?
Yes, there's a science.
I want that job.
There's a science behind why I am talking about the NBA despite the fact that there's no NBA.
Yeah.
But before we get there, there was two stories last week that I just didn't get a chance to because we had an awesome show and we filled it with so much information that I missed two things. And I circled them last week, and we're going to start just because.
Okay.
One of them is, as baseball fans know, there's been a lot of rule changes.
Yep.
In the minors, there are robo-umps determining balls and strikes.
Yep.
Not outs, just balls and strikes. And apparently it's working not very well because the NBA or the Major League Baseball has came out and said already, we're not doing that next year. We got to work this system out a little bit.
Right.
And it's such an interesting debate. In all other sports, there is instant replay. There is that you can see in tennis when a ball goes just barely in or barely out. In soccer, every goal is reviewed by a system. Every call, there's, you know, in football, there's a replay system in place where there's a whole office in New York that only...
So they don't... Baseball doesn't have instant replay or anything?
Instant replay. It's a very...
Archaic?
It's much simpler because, you can only... There are only certain things that you can review in baseball because it's just... That's just how baseball rolls. You only get one or two chances. I think you get one? I'll have to look exactly. There's a replay system, but it's not nearly as
thorough
and foolproof as it is in any sport. But it's also the one that involves the most human error of any of these.
Human error? What do you mean? Umps.
That's
umpire. They're perfect, aren't they?
In every other sport, a referee can get it wrong and somebody fixes it. In baseball, there is no there's no recourse. There's no fix. Man, that umpires union, strong.
Well, they've determined. I mean, legitimately have determined games.
I mean, there's been playoff games. There's been World Series. There's been all sorts of things determined by bad umpiring that in the any other sport just plain doesn't exist.
Right.
So, and I'm actually for it. I'm in the minority. I think I enjoy some missed calls. I enjoy a wide strike zone. I enjoy some of that.
I mean, that's the human element with the whiters. You know, each which ump calls what and how he does. There's a certain science.
There's as much research into the referee's strike zone as there is the opposing pitcher's where he throws the ball.
I could see traditionalists not wanting to get rid of that, going, that's what baseball is.
I mean, that's just it. You'd have to, now you're going to review, in just the same way that you can compare players from the 50s and 60s using advanced statistics, how many of these pitchers would have not won as many or won more games if there was robo-umps in the 40s? It's going to be hard to compare apples to apples in baseball. So I like a good... I like a good umpire protest.
You know,
I like.
I mean, everybody needs a bad guy.
I mean, maybe it's because I watched a great umpire tantrum. If anybody gets a chance, check out the Nationals manager today. He laid down. He got his money's worth out of a. Oh, it was great. I love when they steal a base. All that stuff is just
like Lasorda.
Yeah, it's just this odd clown show that busts out in the middle of a baseball game. I love that kind of stuff.
The kicking of the dirt and
stomping around. Man, that's like a WWF thing to me, and I love that about baseball.
Yeah, and I could see why they want to change that.
Yes.
I mean, the money involved now with professional sports is ridiculous.
Well, and because in baseball, you can watch in real time if that was a ball or a strike.
Yeah.
You know, you're watching at home, you see that it was a ball. They replay it. It was clearly a ball. They called it a strike. So you know that the umpire has done a bad job. So you know that that manager who's about to get kicked out of the game is in the right.
Right.
As I said, they will eventually get to robo-umps. I don't know if they get there for outs on the base path. I don't know what the actual home plate umpire now does. Does he just hang back, sit in a chair until there's a guy at second? I'm not sure. That'll be another.
No.
And the other one, the other story. Yeah, I know. I
was wanted to get to this one for a while.
I wanted to. Antonio Brown, former. Former best wide receiver. This decade was the best wide receiver in football for a couple of years when he played for the Steelers.
Yep.
Got traded to the Raiders, got kicked off the Raiders, got traded to the Buccaneers, got kicked off the Buccaneers.
Well, now he didn't kick.
Did I miss a team in
no,
there?
No, no, no. But he didn't really he did get kicked off, but he walked out.
He left the team during the game, and he never came back. He's never played a down since.
Right, right.
Just an interesting arc for a guy who went from fifth round draft pick to all pro to out of the league to he was former owner of an Arena League football.
Well, technically still is.
No, yes. His team was folded because he stopped paying the bills. It's just remarkable to me. It's such a villain story. If anybody looks up or wants to look up the things Antonio Brown has done off the field, it feels right in line.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me.
Oh, yeah, and it's not just that. It's been a lot. I mean,
stunner to me that just like in the NFL, all the teams gave up trusting him. It is amazing to me that even in the Arena League, that the commissioner of an Arena League would allow, of all people, Antonio Brown to own a...
Well, money.
His dad was a former Arena League superstar as a wide receiver, but no, he's folded. He's not allowed to be near the team. The players are gone from... There's no payroll. The game is
completely
wiped.
Disbanded.
Just liquidated. Gone. So I thought those were two interesting stories for me. Now we can circle back to real sports things.
Really? Like what?
The NBA draft. I'm going to give some people some names to know. It's Thursday. By the time this airs, it'll be Friday. The draft will have happened. It's a pretty quick 3 or 4 hours on ESPN.
How many rounds is it? Do you know?
They have two.
Two?
It's two, so that's why I like it, too. It's 64 players at the most. And
so there's a lot more importance to those 64 players.
On rosters
for that
have 13 players. Yep. 15, there's so few open roster spots because of guaranteed contracts in the NFL that, if you draft a guy, you have a role for him. He's either a first-round pick and you have a rough spot for him in your rotation, or he's starting. Or if he's a player that plays in Europe, you can stash him. You have a plan for all of these draft
picks. Any of these players coming from the G League, too?
Yes. Victor Wembanyama is a 7'5" French center with a, get this, 10-foot standing reach. He can stand on the ground in flat-footed and grab the rim. And he's fast. He's quick. He's got, if anybody, NBA
he's got,
fans.
He's got a lot of the intangibles that they look for. And
he's as a 19-year-old, he can pass, he can shoot, and moves. He's nimble. Moves like Anthony Davis did as a 19-year-old.
When he was healthy.
When he was healthy, playing for Kentucky, and even in his first couple years in Charlotte. Just athletic and rangy. But at 7'5", he is larger than 99% of all NBA players who have ever played.
Right.
So the sky is the limit for
him. He's probably they're putting this guy height level wise to LeBron.
Over LeBron.
They're putting him right. I mean, everybody I listen to are like, it's right there.
Yeah, when they put numbers on him, like 1 to 100,
and they're doing it's just ridiculous the amount of hype they're giving him. Mean, they're breaking down. Is this guy going to rank above Kareem?
Well,
it's like, come on, dude.
And also because what you have in the NBA that you don't have in a lot of other sports is these. I remember hearing the name Victor Wembanyama when he was a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
There were videos, and he played in the French league in like a second tier, but there were videos of this just humongous human doing all the basketball things as a 16-year-old. So he's been researched and studied.
Did you listen to any of the interviews with him?
Yeah.
The kid doesn't polished. Sound like a – he does not no, sound like a kid.
Polished, man.
He is a young, very mature
he's
man.
Been understanding, I mean, he's been kind of like Shohei Ohtani for the Angels. He's been there. His parents were gearing him up as a 7- and 8-year-old, sending him – getting him ready well, to be a, and he well, was being a professional at 13 years
well,
old.
Well, yeah, when he started, he was playing with grown adults.
Yes.
Yeah. At the age of 15 for sure.
And that's where a lot of these in the NBA there's so much projection because they play in all these different leagues. The second ranked player in the draft is Scoot Henderson. Played for 2 years in the G League.
Okay.
Entered the G League, graduated high school as like a 17-year-old, 2 years in the minors of basketball, putting up great numbers, you know, 15 and 6 to say. And he's incredibly fast, projected as, you know, like Derrick Rose, coming and played for Chicago. Like, he's going to be that type of player, but he also was playing in the G League against 18 and 19-year-olds. There are no 30-year-olds in the G League that he's playing against. So it's kind of a, like Brandon Miller was the freshman of the year in the SEC, played for Alabama, was player of the year. Easy to project those numbers into the NBA because he was playing against other will-be professionals at 22, 23 years old.
And most of these, just like football, college football, all these coaches are teaching them pro-style offenses and defense. So they already know. I mean, they kind of got a good idea. They're prepared themselves.
They're a lot of with AAU in basketball, these guys are being pros at – they're getting ready to be pros as teenagers, very young teenagers. So it's so much about projection with there is a set of twins, Amen and Azure Thompson, who played for Overtime Elite, which is a under the G League level minor league basketball that has started up in the last couple of years to kind of compete. So he and his brother are the most athletic. They're 6'7", they can guard all positions, very fast, not great shooters. They're going to be the fifth twins to ever play in the NBA. Wow. Interestingly, 2 out of every 500 births in America are twins. There are five. There have been five in the NBA.
Are they identical or fraternal?
Four identical sets of identical twins in the NBA currently. Robin and Brooke Lopez, Marcus and Markieff Morris, Caleb and Cody Martin, and Justin and Julian Champagne are all identical twins playing in the NBA. There's now going to be a fifth set with Ajir and Amen Thompson. Both of them are going to be top 10 picks. Somewhere between 3 and 10, they're both going to go off the board. But they also have never played against any
this level
they dominated against 17 and 18 year olds. So they will never play against another 17 and 18 year old, but it's an interesting name. There's a lot of players that are going to be great. Out of those players I named, one of them is going to be a bust. Don't know who it is. Two of them probably going to be all pros, but Brandon Miller is going to be he had some character issues. He had some off the court things at Alabama. He was
Alabama.
You know, he was involved in a shooting. He gave the gun to someone who used it to shoot somebody. It was a story. It was a thing.
Right.
He's been cleared of all the wrongdoing legally, and they've done their homework. But Charlotte has the number 2 pick. He's a really good fit. He's going to go second overall. He looks like he's going to be 6'8", forward. So it's an interesting thing. Also, the NBA, there's been trades.
Yep.
A lot of trades that happen on draft
today,
night.
In
the last couple of days, we've seen Bradley Beal get traded from Washington to Phoenix.
Yep.
Phoenix now has a super team full of Mac. They have 4 guys making max contracts, which is the salary cap with 4 guys. So they have to find 9 other players to play on the veterans minimum.
Because one of their issues during the playoffs was
depth. And
horrible.
They did as much to get rid of that depth. But, they saw a window. They see Kevin Garnett, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal are all pros. So you have 3 all pros.
Say Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
I'd like to see
you're Kevin. Close.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, a guy. Yeah. Very,
big
very.
Guy.
Yes.
Yeah. But so, Chris Paul.
And then Chris Paul, who was part of the trade to go to Washington for Bradley Beal, now flipped around by Washington to go to Golden State.
Jesus.
So Golden State, they traded Jordan Poole, who in the regular season averaged 25 a game, in the postseason averaged 10 a game.
Yeah.
He did terribly in the postseason. So, again, State's pushing all in because now they got older and slower, but they got experience. And they have a backup point guard to Steph Curry.
Well, between the two of them, they should see all the games.
You have 2 guys who play 50 games apiece.
Yeah, and I mean, with like the last couple of years, they've been playing the okay, let's have you sit out, you sit out. We'll play these guys this game because it doesn't mean anything.
So much of that in the NBA. And you have to, as a general manager, you really have to account for that so much in your roster building.
Can you imagine that in NFL?
Well, I mean, you kind of are waiting to see, when is a guy going to sit out two games? You know, you see it at the end of seasons, right? The season's a wash. But you never see a guy saying, I'm not going to play in this Thursday game.
Yeah. Hey, coach, I'm going to sit out this quarter. I'll come back in the fourth, win it all.
I want to make sure I'm fresh for the playoffs. Jeez. So I'm going to...
I mean, it's a different scenario. I mean, it's less. It's only 17 games.
It's a lot of three. You know, you're playing three. It's a lot of travel related. Yep. You know, it's interesting to think these are very tall men sleeping in hotel rooms, traveling in airplanes. They're comfortable places, but it's still, that's a wear and tear. And, you know, basketball, even though it's not football, it's still banging around. But, the Celtics, as they always do right around draft time, they traded Marcus Smart, who was a 30-year-old former defensive player of the year, the last guard to win defensive player of the year, and the first since Gary Payton to win defensive player of the year, was traded to Memphis. For round and round, Washington traded some play Kristaps Porzingis who was a former rookie of the year, 25-point a game scorer, a 7-footer who can shoot.
Though, right?
He has consistently played about 55 to 65 games a year, which is kind of almost normal anymore in the NBA. That's
what's not normal, Zion.
That's all I was gonna say. Unless you're Zion Williamson, who's played 103 out of 300 games. Yeah. You're trading for a guy who's changes that team a lot. Makes Marcus Smart was a really veteran presence, a leader, a good passer, decent dribbler, but really great defender on a team that fell short.
Yep.
Didn't stop teams when they needed to. But again, these are teams that you see it in the NBA. You can retool in the NBA like you can't in any other sport because you can move dollar for dollar.
Well, when you only have 13 players, it's easy.
Guaranteed contracts. You can always find a team looking to dump salary. You can always look trying to find somebody who has an expiring contract. So the Celtics traded away Malcolm Brogdon in the offseason, who was a sixth man of the year, and they also traded away Marcus Smart. They picked up draft picks and Kristaps Porzingis. So that's
pretty good. I mean, the way I always look at trades like in the NFL is who fared.
Yes. You know?
And I think that was a pretty across the board, both sides.
Yeah.
I mean, Marcus Smart really needed to go to the Grizzlies.
Grizzlies need that guy.
Yo, they needed that maturity.
Mm-hmm.
That
they've got their starting point guard out for 25 games to start the year.
Because
he did a very, very not smart thing two times in a 3-week period. Yeah. So you pick up a guy who can maybe solve those problems. Not only can he play, but he can...
Well, Smart comes in with a pedigree.
He's won championships.
He's
won awards. He's the guy who will talk to the media. It doesn't have to always be Ja Morant featured. It can be this guy. So
whether he wants it or not, he's going to be the leader.
He's the leader of a new team, and good on him. So that's the NBA. I think the starts at like 6 or so.
I would think 7 Eastern maybe or
something
like that.
Most of those trades happen fairly early if you watch the first 14, 15 picks. And then tomorrow there'll be some more trades and roster turnover. Yep. The Bucks. One more NBA thing. Chris Middleton opted out of a $41 million player option on Wednesday. I'm sure the agents and the Bucks have a thing and they'll figure it out and work it out. But I have a hard time believing Chris Middleton would turn down $41 million. He was hurt. The last few years have not been good to Chris Middleton. He had a streak where he was the second best player on a championship team. That was a few years ago now.
But how upset? I mean, it's like, okay, the Bucks, you got bounced in the first round this year. Why?
And the only problem with salary cap things, if you can't find a trade partner, you have to just run it back. And if you're the Bucks, your options, because you're well over the salary cap without a lot of draft picks, because a lot of these teams like the Celtics have made trades to acquire draft picks. So you can throw in a couple of first-round picks to move guys. Bucks have traded first-round picks to get guys. Brooke Lopez.
Unlike my Wolves, who have traded pretty much their...
Everything for a player.
4 years.
Yeah. For a guy, Rudy Gobert, who is the second-best center on his team. So if you do it wrong, you end up as the Timberwolves. If you do
do it every year.
Boston seems to every year... has made trades on draft night. Like they traded for Ray Allen. They've traded for Kevin Garnett on a draft night. Heck, they traded for Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale on a draft night. Smart GMs, smart teams get better on draft night. Teams like the Bucks are running it back and hoping the other teams get worse in the offseason. Yeah, so that's
like Minnesota.
Right. So that's your NBA. Where
there's
are we
a
at?
Theme there. We're good. We still got 5 minutes.
Time and time. Okay, good. The other part of sports of the week. Once again, we talk about the Brewers being a middling team.
Yeah.
They made me really happy to start the week when they swept the Pirates. I think it was like Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yep.
They swept the Pirates. They were in first place by a game and change over the Cincinnati Reds and the Pirates. And then they lost 2 out of 3 to the Diamondbacks. Lo and behold, somebody got hot in the Central Division, and that was the Reds. The Reds had called up some minor league, real highly rated minor league talent who was playing really well. They hit in a hitter-friendly ballpark, the most hitter-friendly ballpark outside of Colorado in the majors. And now they're, I think, a game and a half up on the Brewers as of Thursday.
Yep, game and a half.
They won 10 games in a row. So that in a division where everybody is 500 and they were kind of bunched together, Cincinnati, and of course that levels off. I could do you some research and tell you why, but eventually that levels off. They're probably the most talented team, but none of these teams are going to win 90 games, I don't think, in their division. So eventually you'd assume Reds kind of come back to earth. But the,
if you're going to get hot, you might as well do it now.
Yes. Well, that's how the Brewers started the year. If without this very great way to start the year with, I think they were like 10-1.
Yep.
They have like the fifth worst record in the majors since then. So you're barely holding on above 500, but nobody else in their division is doing anything else either.
Didn't Joey Votto just get back on too?
Yes.
I mean, not that he's the overwhelming.
Well, at one point, Joey Votto was one of the best players in the National League. That it was, well, we'll call it 10 years ago. But yes, they're getting, they have a, his last name is either, I think it's O'Neill. I can't remember they brought the Reds' number one prospect is also the number one rated prospect in Major League Baseball. I think he's a shortstop and he's incredibly fast. He's doing great. So yeah, the Reds.
De La Cruz.
There we are. And he's putting up highlights. The players they have are doing really well. Unlike the Brewers, who have only two regular players hitting over 250, which is underwhelming as the day is long. Owen Miller, Wisconsin's own Owen Miller, is still hitting right around 290 as a top of the lineup guy. And, he's a good slap hitter, fast enough, but he gets on base.
On the website, on the Google internet, they don't even have a picture for Owen Miller under the players listed.
Maybe that's what he looks like. You look at him, he's just got a fuzzy, you can't see it. You can't see
him. Gray background.
Yeah, he's like John Cena. You can't see him. And Christian Yelich still playing really, really well.
Yeah.
Still, he's getting, his average keeps creeping a little bit higher. He's like 275 at this point.
Making up for the last 2 years.
Well, that's exactly where it's at. But those are the only two players over 250. Brian Anderson, William Contreras, none of the rookies, Rowdy Tellez, no one, Luis Urias, none of them are hitting over 250, which really makes it tough on the starting rotation that's on their eighth starter.
What's the pitching?
Considering how much starting pitching they've lost, every pitcher has been on the disabled list in their top five. So you've been playing with AAA talent most of the year. Your bullpen is still one of the best bullpens in baseball.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, somebody knows something. There's something in the water of Milwaukee. I don't know.
The beer.
Could be. I mean, Bernie Brewer is a really nice guy, and you never know. You eat enough Usingers, and every year they just get a rock in the bullpen and a couple of random sixth, seventh, eighth inning guys, and their bullpen is great. Their best two starting pitchers are Wade Miley and Julio Teheran, which should mean nothing to most baseball fans because those are not names. Julio Teheran was a rookie of the year, 8 years ago for the Braves. And he's just kind of floated around and lost his stuff and found his stuff this year. The Brewers haven't hit when he's pitched, but he's got an ERA under 2, and he's pitched like 6 games. Wade Miley has been hurt 9 times in the last 2 years on the disabled list, was hurt earlier this year. But he comes in off the disabled list, pitches 5-6 innings, scoreless ball. And Corbin Burns hasn't pitched that well. He's got an ERA just under 4 and a under 500 record. Brandon Woodruff hasn't pitched since the first game of the year. Freddy Peralta's been not great, but he's an ERA 4.5, not pitching great. Adrian Hauser, every starting pitcher that was supposed to be something has not for the Brewers. So considering all of those things, you'll take 3 games over 500 because the games they got coming up in the next 7, they got a 7-game road trip. They go against the Cleveland Guardians, the New York Mets, and the Pirates. So by the time that Pirates series hits, I think it's a 4-gamer, 3 or 4 games against the Pirates, Yeah, Cleveland's under 500. The Mets are a really disappointing team, one of the worst records with the highest payroll in baseball. So tons of talent that is not good. So if it's like a 7-game road trip, not great because they've had some 10-game home streaks. But you can still have a chance to be floating around over 500. You still have a chance to win some division games against the Pirates, 2 out of 3 against the Pirates. So once again, we are in the meat of the baseball season. Last week was a big week, and they, you know, B-, they did fine. This one is another, let's see him go over 500. You can start to feel a little more optimistic because eventually either guys start hitting where you're calling minor leaguers up or something happens where your starting pitching starts to look good. So this is a nice get into baseball and like it. That
could be it.
That could be it. Next week we're gonna get into soccer. You did this on purpose. You made us get really conversational, and I was gonna talk the CONCACAF Nations League.
I figured I'd talk about just bring up more baseball stuff. You don't have to talk about
the
soccer.
The U.S. won 3-0 and 2-0 against Mexico and Canada and win the Gold Cup. Pulisic with 2 goals. They dominated against Mexico. There was red cards. It was a fantastic game.
Right.
It was great.
Right.
That's
about
all
next
we can
week.
Do. All right. This has been a great show. I have enjoyed every minute of this. If we have time for music.
We do.
We are going to play Ready to Start by Arcade Fire. We're going to do one more Arcade Fire. It's a great song. Enjoy your week. Thank you, everybody, for
tuning
in. Stay really cool. Bye.